What is the Global Public-Private Partnership by Ian Davis? The Global Public-Private Partnership, GPPP, is a worldwide network of stakeholder capitalists and their partners. This collective of stakeholders, the capitalists and their partners, comprises global corporations, including central banks, philanthropic foundations, multi-billionaire philanthropists, policy think tanks, governments and their agencies, non-governmental organizations, selected academic and scientific institutions, global charities, the labor unions, and other chosen thought leaders. The Global Public-Private Partnership controls global finance and the world's economy. It sets world, national, and local policy via global governance, and then promotes those policies using the mainstream media corporations who are also partners within the GPPP. Often, those policies are devised by the think tanks before being adopted by governments, who are also GPPP partners. Government is the process of transforming global public-private partnership, global governance, into hard policy, legislation, and law. Under our current model of Westphalian national sovereignty, the government of one nation cannot make legislation or law in another. However, through global governance, the GPPP create policy initiatives at the global level which then cascade down to people in every nation. This typically occurs via an intermediary policy distributor, such as the IMF or IPCC, and national governments then enact the recommended policies. The policy trajectory is set internationally by the authorized definition of problems and their prescribed solutions. Once the GPPP enforce the consensus internationally, the policy framework is set. The GPPP stakeholder partners then collaborate to ensure the desired policies are developed, implemented, and enforced. This is the oft-quoted international rules-based system. In this way, the GPPP control many nations at once without having to resort to legislation. This has the added advantage of making any legal challenge to the decisions made by the most senior partners in the GPPP, it is an authoritarian hierarchy, extremely difficult. The GPPP has traditionally been referenced in the context of public health and specifically in a number of United Nations documents, including those from their agencies such as the World Health Organization. In their 2005 document Connecting for Health, the World Health Organization, in noting what the Millennium Development Goals meant for global health, revealed the emerging GPPP. Quote, "These changes occurred in a world of revised expectations about the role of government, that the public sector has neither the financial nor the institutional resources to meet their challenges, and that a mix of public and private resources is required. Building a global culture of security and cooperation is vital. The beginnings of a global health infrastructure are already in place. Information and communication technologies have opened opportunities for change in health, with or without policymakers leading the way. Governments can create an enabling environment and invest in equity, access, and innovation." End quote. The revised role of governments meant that they were no longer leading the way. The traditional policymakers weren't making policy anymore. Other global public-private partners were. National government had been relegated to creating the global public-private partnership's enabling environment by taxing the public and increasing government borrowing debt. This is a debt owed to the senior partners in the global public-private partnership. They are also the beneficiaries of the loans and use this comically misnamed public investment to create markets for themselves and the wider GPPP. The researchers, Buse and Walt, 2000, offers a good official history of the development of the GPPP concept. They suggest it was a growing response to the growing disillusionment in the UN project as a whole and the emerging realization that global corporations were increasingly key to policy implementation. This correlates to the development of the stakeholder capitalism concept, first popularized in the 1970s. Buse and Walt outlined how global public-private partnerships were designed to facilitate the participation of new breeds of corporations. These entities had recognized the folly of their previously destructive business practices. They were ready to own their mistakes and make amends. They decided they would achieve this by partnering with government to solve global problems. These existential threats were defined by the global public-private partnerships and the selected scientists, academics, and economists they funded. The two researchers identified a key Davos address delivered by the then UN Secretary General Kofi Annan to the WEF in 1998 as marking the transition to a global public-private partnership-based global governance model. Quote, "The United Nations has been transformed since we last met here in Davos. The organization has undergone a complete overhaul that I have described as a quiet revolution. A fundamental shift has occurred. The United Nations once dealt only with governments. By now we know that peace and prosperity cannot be achieved without partnerships involving governments, international organizations, the business community, and civil society. The business of the United Nations involves the businesses of the world." End quote. Buse and Walt claimed that this signified the arrival of a new type of responsible global capitalism. As we shall see, that is not how the corporations viewed this arrangement. Indeed, Buse and Walt acknowledged why the GPPP was such an enticing prospect for the global giants of banking, industry, finance, and commerce. Quote, "Shifting ideologies and trends in globalization have highlighted the need for closer global governance, an issue for both private and public sectors. We suggest that at least some of the support for the GPPPs stems from this recognition and a desire on the part of the private sector to be part of global regulatory decision-making processes." End quote. The conflict of interest is obvious. We are simply expected to accept, without question, that global corporations are committed to putting humanitarian and environmental causes before profit. Supposedly, a global public-private-led system of global governance is somehow beneficial for us. Believing this requires a considerable degree of naivety. Many of the stakeholder corporations have been convicted or publicly held accountable for the crimes they have committed. These include war crimes. The apparent passive agreement of the political class that these partners should effectively set global policy, regulations, and spending priorities seems like infantile credulity. This naivety is, in itself, a charade. As many academics, economists, historians, and researchers have pointed out, corporate influence, even dominance of the political system, had been increasing for generations. Elected politicians have long been the junior partners in this arrangement. With the arrival of global public-private partnerships, we were witnessing the birth of the process to formalize this relationship, the creation of a cohesive world order. The politicians have simply stuck to the script ever since. They didn't write it. It is important to understand the difference between government and governance in the global context. Government claims the right, perhaps through a quasi-democratic mandate, to set policy and decree legislation, law. The alleged Western representative democracies, which aren't democracies at all, are a model of national governments where elected representatives form the executive who enact legislation. For example, in the UK, this is achieved through the parliamentary process. Perhaps the closest thing to this form of national government on an international scale is the United Nations General Assembly. It has a tenuous claim to democratic accountability and can pass resolutions which, while they don't bind member states, can create new principles which may become international law when later applied by the International Court of Justice. However, this isn't really world government. The UN lacks the authority to decree legislation and form law. The only way its principles can become law is via judicial ruling. The non-judicial power to create law is reserved for governments, and their legislative reach only extends to their own national borders. Due to the often fraught relationships between national governments, world government starts to become impractical. with both the non-binding nature of UN resolutions and the international jockeying for geopolitical and economic advantage, there isn't currently anything we could call a world government. There is the additional problem of national and cultural identity. Most populations aren't ready for a distant, unelected world government. People generally want the political class to have more democratic accountability, not less. The global public-private partnership would certainly like to run a world government, but imposition by overt force is beyond their capability. Therefore, they have employed other means, such as deception and propaganda, to promote the notion of global governance. Former Carter administration advisor and Trilateral Commission founder Zbigniew Brzezinski recognized how this approach would be easier to implement. In his 1970 book, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, he wrote, quote, "Though the objective of shaping a community of the developed nations is less ambitious than the goal of world government, it is more attainable." End quote. The last 30 years have seen numerous global public-private partnerships form as the concept of global governance has evolved. A major turning point was the WEF's conspectus of multi-stakeholder governance. With their 2010 publication of Everybody's Business, Strengthening International Cooperation in a More Interdependent World, the WEF outlined the elements of a GPPP stakeholder's form of global governance. They established their Global Agenda Councils to deliberate and suggest policy covering practically every aspect of our existence. The WEF created a corresponding global governance body for every aspect of our society, from our values and economy through to our security and public health, our welfare systems, consumption, access to water, food, security, crime, our rights, sustainable development, and the global financial and monetary system. Nothing was left untouched. The executive chairman of the WEF, Klaus Schwab, spelled out what the objective of global governance was. Quote, "Our purpose has been to stimulate a strategic thought process among all stakeholders about ways in which international institutions and arrangements should be adapted to contemporary challenges. The world's leading authorities have been working in interdisciplinary, multi-stakeholder global agenda councils to identify gaps and deficiencies in international cooperation and to formulate specific proposals for improvement. These discussions have run through the forum's regional summits during 2009, as well as the forum's recent annual meeting 2010 in Davos Clusters, where many of the emerging proposals were tested by ministers, CEOs, heads of NGOs and trade unions, leading academics, and other members of the Davos community. The global redesign process has provided an informal working laboratory or marketplace for a number of good policy ideas and partnership opportunities. We have sought to expand international governance discussions to take more preemptive and coordinated action in the full range of risks that have been accumulating in the international system." End quote. By 2010, the WEF had taken it upon themselves to begin the global redesign process. They defined the international challenges and they proposed the solutions. Fortunately for the GPPP, their proposals meant more control and partnership opportunities for them. The WEF sought to spearhead the expansion of this international governance. In just one example, in 2019, the UK government announced its partnership with the WEF to develop future business, economic, and industrial regulations. The UK government were committed to supporting a regulatory environment created by the global corporations who would then be regulated by the same regulations they had designed. The WEF do not have an electoral mandate of any kind. None of us have any opportunity to influence or even question their judgments, and yet they are working in partnership with our supposedly democratically elected governments and other GPP stakeholders to redesign the planet we all live on. Stakeholder capitalism lies at the heart of the GPPP. Essentially, it usurps democratic government, or indeed government of any kind, by placing global corporations at the center of decision-making. Despite deriving authority from no one but themselves, The leaders of the Global Public-Private Partnership assume their own modern interpretation of the divine right of kings and rule absolutely. In January 2021, the WEF spoke about how they viewed stakeholder capitalism. Quote, "The most important characteristic of the stakeholder model today is that the stakes of our new system are now more clearly global. What was once seen as externalities in national economic policymaking and individual corporate decision-making will now need to be incorporated or internalized in the operations of every government, company, community, and individual. The planet is the center of the global economic system, and its health should be optimized in the decisions made by all other stakeholders." End quote. The Global Public-Private Partnership will oversee everything. Every government, all business, our so-called communities where we live, and each of us individually. We are not the priority. The priority is the planet, or so the World Economic Forum claim. Centralized control of the entire planet, all its resources, and everyone that lives on it is the core ethos of the Global Public-Private Partnership. There is no need to interpret GPPP intentions. We don't have to read between the lines. It is stated plainly in the introduction to the WEF's Great Reset Initiative. Quote, "To improve the state of the World Economic Forum is starting the Great Reset Initiative. The COVID-19 crisis is fundamentally changing the traditional context for decision-making. The inconsistencies, inadequacies, and contradictions of multiple systems, from health and financial to energy and education, are more exposed than ever. Leaders find themselves at an historic crossroads. As we enter a unique window of opportunity to shape the recovery, this initiative will offer insights to help inform all those determining the future state of global relations, the direction of national economies, the priorities of societies, the nature of business models, and the management of a global commons." End quote. It should be noted that the WEF are just one partner organization among many in the GPPP. However, they have been perhaps the most influential in terms of public relations throughout the pseudo-pandemic. Contrary to the hopes of Buse and Walt, we see an emergent global corporate dictatorship not caring stewardship of the planet. The Global Public-Private Partnership will determine the future state of global relations, the direction of national economies, the priorities of societies, the nature of business models, and the management of a global commons. There is no opportunity for any of us to participate in either their project or the subsequent formation of policy. While in theory, governments do not have to implement GPPP policy, the reality is that they do. Global policies have been an increasing facet of our lives in the post-World War II era. The mechanism of translating GPPP policy initiatives first onto national and then regional and eventually local policy can be clearly identified by looking at sustainable development. In 1972, the privately funded independent policy think tank, the Club of Rome, COR, published The Limits of Growth. As we saw with the rollout of the pseudo-pandemic, the COR used computer models to predict what they decreed were the complex problems faced by the entire planet, the world problematique. Their offered opinions derived from the commissioned work of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's System Dynamic World 3 model. This assumed global population would deplete natural resources and pollute the environment to the point where overshoot and collapse would inevitably occur. This is not a scientific fact, but rather a suggested scenario. So far, none of the predictions made have come to pass. The scientific and statistical to and fro on the claims made in The Limits to Growth has been prolific. However, ignoring all doubts, the World 3 model was firmly planted at the center of the sustainable development policy environment. In 1983, the Brundtland Commission was convened by former Norwegian Prime Minister Gro Harland Brundtland and then Secretary General of the UN Javier Perez de Cuellar. Both were Club of Rome members. Based upon the highly questionable assumptions in the World 3 model, they set about uniting governments around the world to pursue sustainable development policies. In 1987, the Commission published the Brundtland Report, also known as Our Common Future. Central to the idea of sustainable development outlined in the report was population control, reduction. This policy decision to get rid of people won international acclaim and awards for the authors. The underlying assumptions for these policy proposals weren't publicly challenged at all. The academic and scientific debate raged but remained almost completely unreported. As far as the public knew, scientific assumption and speculation was a proven fact. It is now impossible to question these unproven assumptions and obviously inaccurate models without being accused of climate denial. This resulted in the Millennium Development Goals, and eventually, in 2015, they gave way to the United Nations' full adoption of Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs. In turn, these have been translated into government policy. For example, the UK government proudly announced their net zero policy commitment to sustainable development goals in 2019. SDGs were already making an impact at the regional and local level in counties, cities, towns and boroughs across the UK. Nearly every council across the country has a sustainable development plan. Regardless of what you think about the global threats we may or may not face, the origin and the distribution pathway of the resultant policy is clear. A privately funded globalist think tank was the driver of a policy agenda which led to the creation of a global policy framework adopted by governments the world over, which has impacted communities in nearly every corner of the earth. Sustainable Development Goals are just one among numerous examples of GPPP global governance in action. The elected politicians' role in this process is negligible. They merely serve to implement and sell the policy to the public. It doesn't matter who you elect. The policy trajectory is set at the global governance level. This is the dictatorial nature of the global public-private partnership, and nothing could be less democratic.